Hello, this is the Football Family. My name is Paul Dallery, and you are very welcome along to another episode of this podcast, which is exclusive to members of the 42. Thanks, as always, for being with us as we reflect on another international window, certainly one of the more encouraging international windows there's been from an Irish perspective in recent times. And joining me as ever to do so are football journalist David Snaid and the 42's own Gavin Cooney. Hello, lads.
How are you, Dallas?
Afternoon.
Dave, I don't know if your little boy was allowed to stay up and watch the game last night, but my daughter saw the first half before it was bedtime. And when she woke up this morning and I told her the score, she asked me if I'd taken a picture of the TV screen at the end of the game. She seemed to need proof that Ireland had actually scored four goals. So I had to cite Gavin's match report on the 42 instead. But I felt like I was being accused of by a five-year-old of peddling Stephen Kenny propaganda, sort of like the claims that a certain North Korean leader hit five holes in one in his first ever game of golf. But you were there last night. I'm guessing it's still just nice to be back covering games with a bit of atmosphere, and even nicer when there's some decent football being played as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Along with my three-year-old son, if it's not Norman Price causing havoc in Ponty Pandy, he has absolutely no interest in that. Yeah, it is good. I'm feeling confident today. I'm feeling so confident. I'm even having a coffee in a glass. I've been absolutely slagged to bits by certain friends who've come to this house and seen me drink coffee out of this, saying I have notions. But after last night, I'm feeling confident. I feel I can do what I want. But it was a very good win. A very, very good win against a side who are ranked third in Ireland. Should be remembered, and who are ranked nearly, if you're going off the FIFA rankings, they're twice as good as Luxembourg. So it's not as if it was a total walk in the park. You know, you don't only have to look back a few months when Qatar were more than a match for Ireland and deservedly got a 1-1 draw in a game. But yeah, no, yesterday was great. I saw Gav's tweet beforehand because I was actually a small bit delayed getting into the Aviva about fans getting turned away, not realising they couldn't get tickets on the door, and even just driving up through town, down past Sheriff Street and into the ground, over with Grand Canal Dock and all. And just, you see people walking to the game and stuff, and there just was that sense of, a bit of a sense of an occasion about it, which up until the Serbia game hasn't been there. So hopefully now, at this point now, when you're getting a bit of momentum going into the end of the campaign, and listen, obviously the wheels had fallen off long before, unfortunately, but the hope would be that this window, combined with some decent performances in the last one and that late result against Serbia, would maybe finish with it, not so much a flourish, but just a bit more of an example of the good work that does seem to be happening, more indications of it. And I think that's all we can really hope for next month.
Gav, Ireland fans have had some dismal nights at the Aviva in the last few years. For example, the hammering against Denmark, the night when there would have been a hammering against Northern Ireland were it not for Darren Randolph. Who could forget the game against Gibraltar that was still hanging in the balance until Robbie Brady scored in the 93rd minute? And of course, only six or seven months ago, the defeat to Luxembourg that seems a lifetime ago now. I know there's a cohort out there, as Dave kind of alluded to, who will say it was only Qatar. But given what they've had to contend with recently, I think Ireland fans are fairly entitled to feel somewhat jovial today, aren't they?
Oh yeah, it was really, really good, wasn't it? Proper atmosphere around the game. Everyone was happy. I really don't know how so many former players and a handful of journalists and newspaper columnists read the room so wrong, and this idea that their fan base were divided over Stephen Kenny. It's very much unified in support of him and the team based off the attendance last night and the chance that we're rolling off the terraces both this month and last. So that was really, really good. Like, Qatar are, well, no great shakes, if I can use that a different kind of spelling of shakes, but they were worse than anticipated. As Dave says, they're ranked pretty high, reasonably high in the world, in around the 40s, maybe just inside the top 50.
Well, no, sorry, the only reason why, because I was curious about this, like, they're ranked 43rd, right? So they're ranked above Ireland. Obviously Ireland are 50th. Like, they're ranked above Scotland, they're ranked above Greece. But if you actually look at the countries who are immediately above them, the five countries, you've got Romania, Turkey, Hungary, Norway, Slovakia, and then there's Russia. So, like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, there are countries who are just immediately above in the ranking. So, like, they've obviously been doing well for the last little while, and they're like, trying to obviously prepare for the World Cup. So they've obviously had serious preparation and got decent results. So, like, it's not as if it was, like, say, an Oman rocking up and looked as if they had never played together before. Like, this is a team who had, I think it was eight of the same starting 11 from the first time Ireland played them, and looked really well. And Ireland, only had two of the same starters. I think it was Shane Long and like Shane Long started in that game, which gives you an indication of how far along we've come now, where that, like, it'd be a long time before that happens unless there's a major catastrophe. So, no, I just got a sense of, I'm sorry for cutting across gap there, but I just genuinely got a sense of this was an Ireland team who are beginning on a squad as well, because obviously there was changes made, just beginning to get into a bit of a rhythm and find a bit of a rhythm. And listen, it can be hard to maintain an international football, and that's going to be the challenge.
Yeah, no, it's just to build on that, like, this is going somewhere now. You know, like, Qatar played very poorly on the night, but, like, Ireland have been making heroes out of teams from outside the top 100, both under Stephen Kenny and under previous managers. So just how convincing and how decisive it was, and just the intensity and the conviction that they had in their play was so, so good. And there's a real, as Dave said, real rhythm now in that selection. And there's real depth, actually, in that selection and in that formation now. Like, you take Callum Robinson as irreplaceable just because he has so much quality and he's scoring so many goals. But he's actually probably the only, like, he's probably the only injury that could derail us, you know, because otherwise there are at least, at the very worst, there are serviceable replacements in every single position across the in that formation, which is testament to I don't know if it was always by plan, sometimes it's by necessity because there was so much player unavailability over the last year, but it just goes to show the squad building that has gone on over the last 12 months.
The good thing about it as well, we say with the Robinson form, is like he hasn't scored a goal, I think it was maybe 6 to 8 games for West Brom. So it's not as if he's a striker who's coming in unbelievable form, and regardless of what system he's just been thrown into, because he's banging in the goals, is full of confidence. Like, he's a striker who hasn't scored for a while. So what I think was more impressive was the way Kenny has used him and put him into this system, that, and has maybe got into his head a little bit in terms of actually getting through to him and talking about the fact that he is going to be this figure for us. That's one of the more impressive things about this, is the fact that you've got a player coming in who, even though he has been playing for West Brom, and West Brom are challenging at the top end of the Championship and doing really well, it's not a player who would have been coming in maybe feeling absolutely brilliant about his own form. So I do think that's another reason to be a bit optimistic going into the next window again, is that because of how the system will work, and fingers crossed, Ireland will have as close to a fully fit squad as possible. It should work again. It's not as if you're going to be like needing to do loads more work on it. Obviously, to be fine tuning, but it does look now in certain situations, like they showed last night, that they know what's required, and I think that's a big thing. And I think, listen, it's taken maybe a little bit of a while to get there. And I still think it'll only be once you see it for a prolonged period that you get that sense. But if this is a starting point and Azerbaijan is a starting point, well, then I think it could be a good way to, I think it could be a good moment to look back on for hopefully a bit more of a successful tenure for him.
Sure, yeah. And in your piece for the Irish Examiner today, Dave, you rightly gave a bit of attention to Callum Robinson, but also to Jeff Hendrick. It was a good night for many of the Irish players, but those two especially. And as our esteemed colleague at the 42, Gavin Casey, put it last night, Stephen Kenny is bringing something out of Jeff Hendrick, and that something appears to be Andrea Pirlo.
Very good. That's a good line. Do you know what it was as well? Remember, we spoke about this already on Monday about trying to find out a bit more about, say, Anthony Barty and the coaching that he was doing. And so obviously just watching the warm-up and stuff, it was very interesting that Anthony Barty focused a lot on some of the possession drills with the midfield and defenders, and was really putting them through their paces even during the warm-up. And it was actually a decent kind of pass and moving routine that he was doing, and he was injecting a real bit of pace into it. But in part in the move, it was like, say, you had basically Houlihan staying in the centre and then the defence and the midfielders operating them around them and doing your kind of like one-touch rondo passing. But it was Houlihan who kind of was staying as the central figure, and it was Hendrick was the one who was basically getting demands, even in the warm-up, placing them to move, essentially. And that's what it looked like in the game, where like he was the one in the midfield who had got a bit more of a licence to get forward. But also had that demands on him as well, that when he needed to try and cover back, because obviously there was a couple of times where Qatar were able to break, but just didn't have the quality to do anything with it. And he was really good. He just grew into the game, and early in the first half especially, I thought his link would play down the right hand side with Matt Doherty was really clever. He kind of seemed to be on the right wavelength. I think as in a midfield, there was times where maybe he did kind of get a bit too far away from Conor Howlahan, but the system they were playing with Jamie McGrath almost dropping back in as an auxiliary midfielder when needed, I think that was obviously something that he was allowed to do. He wasn't, I don't think it was in discipline on his part. And then, yeah, there was a couple of moments, a couple of long range shots, but obviously the pass for the goal was just brilliant. Like, I know obviously the fact that it came at the end of such a, what was it, 30, it was 38, 39 passes, keeping the ball for a couple of minutes, and everyone was involved, and there was patience and all. But I just think it was that last split second has actually been the problem for Ireland, not seeing that pass, not being capable of delivering it. I think Hendrick has always had it in him. That's why he's got so much criticism, because we've seen flashes of it. Like, you go back to that game against Georgia a few years ago, that little pirouette at the touchline where he kind of danced around a few players and set up a goal, and you're kind of thinking, like, this is, you can see what's in him. It's about, it's being constantly about getting that consistency from him. Like, he's 29, so I was talking about potential is gone. It's about finding that level of consistency. The only problem would be now as well, you'd imagine that Hendrick will be finding a new club soon enough, which could be a blessing for him, because I think at this stage he just needs games. He just needs to be playing constantly, and without being kind of some people, just getting into that rhythm of playing all the time. Because if he is playing those games, and he can play in a system that allows him to maybe express himself a bit more and actually find themselves in those positions to affect the game, I think we could see a couple of good years out of him at this in the latter stage, which is mad to say in the latter stages of his career, because that's where he is getting to now.
I think the Saudis might appreciate Hendrick playing well against Qatar, so maybe he'll have earned himself a contract there. But Stephen Kenny was effusive in his praise with Hendrick after it. He said it was the best game that Hendrick has ever played for Ireland. I don't know about that, but he was, given the level of the opposition, but he was very, very good. And just to build on what Dave Riley points out there from the warm-up, really interesting point, the team is constructed to bring the best out of him now at the moment. They're, like, he generally kind of leads the press a lot of the time. And Kenny was interesting afterwards. He said that playing a midfield two rather than a midfield three actually suits him, in the sense that it gives him more space to play. And it was notable that Matt Doherty played a lot further out to the right wing. He was a lot wider in this game, Doherty, than he has been in previous games. So he usually cuts in almost into a kind of inside right position sometimes. And I think that was to give Hendrick room to play in that kind of pocket of space from which he set up the third goal. So the team is constructed, I think, to get the best out of Hendrick and give him space to play. Now, unfortunately, there's a flip side to that, is that the opposition have sometimes too much space to play through the midfield. And that needs addressing, I think. Like, at times, if the opposition can beat the Irish press, it's just a little bit too easy to play in behind them. Now, I think Kenny trusted the three centre backs to defend one on one against the quality of opposition that Ireland played this week, but they'll struggle to do that, especially against Portugal and possibly against Luxembourg as well. So, and Dave rightly points out that Jamie McGrath did some good covering in that position when he needed to. So maybe McGrath is the answer there, in terms of just striking that little bit more balance and to allow Hendrick bomb on and affect the game as he did yesterday.
Yeah. And as Dave said there, Jeff Hendrick could be on the way out soon at Newcastle, given what's going on there, which might be a good thing for him, because
he hasn't been playing anyway. So we probably, even regardless, you know what I mean? Steve Bruce hasn't been playing.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the many, many players over the years for whom a move to Newcastle hasn't worked out well. But lads, we had some good questions in on the members' WhatsApp group. Now, I wasn't there last night, but the atmosphere seemed really, really good, as was the case against Serbia last month, and there was a decent travelling support out in Baku over the weekend as well. A question here from Ronan Folan, which I'll put to you, Dave. Ronan wants to know, how important is having increased numbers of supporters for the Aviva and travelling fans for away games?
Well, if you look at, if you even just take not these two games, but the Serbia game, I think it was massively important in that maybe last quarter of the game, where it was very clear that, like Serbia would be far the better team, could have obviously put the game to bed. I think the fact that there was some really excellent saves from Gavin Bazunu actually kind of lifted the crowd a little bit. And like what happens in a match when a crowd realises that the team actually need a bit of a dig out as well, they kind of did actually provide a bit of an energy. It was something that the manager and the players all spoke about after that Serbia game. The fans, it was that they felt it as well, and it was noticeable. And like, I know, listen, it's mad. Like, the Irish fans obviously have such a good reputation, and yet there's loads of Irish fellas who will slag Irish fans and just say, oh, well, they just want to go and clean up rubbish and they want to be seen to be great lads and all the rest of it. But like, when there's moments when the team do need a lift and players kind of play off a crowd, that is a big part of what playing for Ireland is about. And I don't think you can underestimate it a little bit. Like, it's sort of, it is, like, there is a major emotional factor involved in it. It's like, I don't think that can actually be underestimated. And I think that was very evident in terms of the Serbia game. Also, I think that would have been quite helpful for the FAI, lads in the FAI, to kind of actually gauge the mood a little bit and see where people were at and the public were at in terms of what's happening with Stephen Kenny and the team, because there's no getting away from it that does happen. And especially more so I'd say at club level, but where like a crowd turns against the manager, and that could be if the board know that there's not going to be a negative reaction to getting rid of them, it kind of makes their job a little bit easier. Whereas I would say, with people singing Stephen Kenny's name home and away in the last couple of games and really kind of buying into with some of the younger players that are coming through, but also maybe seeing, you mentioned Jeff Hendrick there, but also maybe seeing a bit of a renaissance with some of the older players, and that seeing what the older guard can offer. Like, I think it would be a serious decision for them to turn around and say, well, do you know what, you didn't deliver on World Cup, now you're gone. So like, I don't think the next window will be decisive now on what happens, because I do genuinely think, you know, obviously what Paul Fennessy was writing as well, like, I do think you can see a kind of a blueprint for what he's trying to do. And listen, if it doesn't happen in the next year or so, well, then you've got a different option to make, or a different decision to make. But I would say, I think the vast majority of people who were in that stadium yesterday are a little bit excited by what the prospect of what could happen. We don't know if it's definitely going to happen, but of what could happen. And I think, yeah, like, the fans that have been in the stadium has been really impressive. Although, in saying that, one of my friends who did bring their sons to their first game, both made the point afterwards that they made sure to temper expectations and said, listen, we don't always play like this. So there is still, although I made the point, just tell them Ireland play like that when they're wearing blue. So another 100 years will have another. But like, I think the fans have so far shown their backing for what they're trying to do.
Sure, yeah. Lads, I know it's very out of character for me to show Corkonian bias, but I did feel a bit sorry for Adam Eda last night. I thought he might get on in the second half to try and get that first international goal. He didn't have a great time out in Baku. I think largely he's done well for Ireland without getting that elusive goal, but his situation at club level probably needs to be looked at in January, as we've said a few times before on this podcast. If you look at his Premier League appearances this season, he got 13 minutes against Liverpool, 11 against Leicester, 10 against Arsenal, 2 against Watford and 1 against Burnley. Those kind of fleeting appearances probably aren't going to do much for his development. And Gav, a question on that from Jack Joyce, and I think this might apply to Aaron Connolly as well, actually. But Jack says, is it essential for his Ireland progress, or can he fight for a spot at Norwich and still be a success for Ireland?
I think he has to move. Kenny openly talked about last night of picking the team on form, because these guys have been playing. Ogbeni's playing in League One, but he's playing and he's match fit, and he's impressed when he has been playing for Ireland off the bench. So got his start. Jamie McGrath's in Scotland, but he's playing. So that's why he's in the team. So Eden needs to develop. I mean, Kenny has said, and Keith Andrews has spoken about the fact that at the moment Eden and Amabamadele are only developing at international level, and you can see how much they have developed in Eden's case in a year, in Amabamadele's case a month. So you can imagine, like, if they're playing every week at club level, how much more they have to improve. But yeah, they do need a move now, because Kenny was making the point that there is real competition for places in that team, and even in that squad. You know, like, Will Keane and Liam Scales did make the squad. As it turns out, Keane had a slight groin issue, so missed a couple of training sessions in the lead into this game, hence why he didn't make the squad. So yeah, have to get a move, I think, at this point. And it doesn't, if it's the Championship, so be it. If it's to League One, that is not the end of the world, because once he's playing every week, I think actually that's the main thing. That's what Bizunu has profited from. That Parrott was among the first off the bench last night, probably because he's playing every week in League One. And briefly on Connolly, I think that's one of the more interesting subplots of this window, is how Kenny has changed his tune on Aaron Connolly. He was so, he stuck by him so loyally in the last window, said he's, we've only seen 70% of his true potential, but Connolly didn't play a minute of this window. And Kenny went as far as saying last week that his career is actually stalled a little bit because he can't get in the Brighton team. So the message now is very much that get out and play, lads, because that's, otherwise they'll be struggling to make the international team because there are so many guys who are playing, forcing Kenny's hand for selection.
Yeah, it's incredible to think that it's now over 2 years since Connolly scored those two goals against Tottenham, and not a whole lot has happened since then. Dave, Ireland are at the other end of the pitch looking in fairly good nick defensively, two clean sheets in a row for the first time under Steve Kenny, and three promising young goalkeepers, several good options as centre-backs, and another debutant emerging last night. Ian O'Reilly asks, will Darragh O'Shea get back in, or does Kenny stick to the back three that have delivered, and also Nathan Collins to come into contention too, he says.
Well, yeah, well, like O'Shea won't be back in for November because he's out for another, when he did his ankle last month, wasn't it? So he's out for 6 months, another five months. So all going well with his recovery, he'll be back in for the Nation League, and that's in June, isn't it? Four games in June. You'd imagine by then he should be back kind of in and around the mix for kind of obviously playing regularly for maybe for West Brom, or he could be in pre-season and stuff, I don't know. Again, I think it comes back now. I think the jersey now belongs to Andrew Omobamadeli at the moment. But then if he's not playing, by the time the next window comes around when O'Shea is also fit, it all could also depend on where they're at their club level. I do think that there's a good balance between that three with those three in terms of with Duffy, with Egan, and with Omobamadeli, just because they kind of, I think they're all good defenders. They're all really good defenders. But I also think that they have different qualities in terms of, like, I think Egan's much better, would be very good at actually bringing the ball out from the back and setting up a hack with pass. And I think Duffy showed it that he can be capable when teams actually do step off him and actually can ping balls. And I think with Omobamadeli, he's good at kind of venturing forward with the ball at his feet, as he showed against Derby. He has got a decent shot on him. And then when he was required, he put in a good tackle in the box in the first half when I think there was about Katara were going to get a shot away. But again, I think what was important about that was, I just think with Egan and Duffy especially, because they're so experienced, but like there are two lads who came into this window just in really great form. And when you have that at the back, and you have Bazunu there obviously for the competitive game against Azerbaijan, who they all know trust, I just think that radiates confidence throughout the team when they know that they're in safe hands really at the back in terms of defensively, but also now beginning to know and expect what to be doing in possession and the different angles that have to be made. And just I think things are beginning to become a bit more second nature now with how they kind of do build up a little bit. So that would be my take on it.
Yeah. Just one more from the members, lads. Gav, I'll put it to you, and Dave did kind of give his take on this earlier as well. But Conor McManus says, are the last two games enough for the FAI to extend Kenny's contract, or will he still need 4 points or 3 points and a good performance from the last two games against Luxembourg and Portugal? Yeah, is there any chance, Gav, that Kenny's contract situation will be resolved before the next window, or is that unlikely at this stage?
I'd say it's unlikely, just because the line has always been that they'll make a decision in November. And like, they should wait till November. They should stay true to their word. I honestly think it'd be totally mad not to give him a contract extension. Like, you can see the enthusiasm around the team, the fact that they sold out the tickets that they were allowed to sell last night. Like Shane Duffy said, anyone with eyes could see the progression that they've been making, and now it's reflected on the scoreboard. Like, that performance last night was really, it wasn't perfect, but it was really excellent, and it's as good as we've seen from an Ireland team at home in years. And it was just an enjoyable performance to watch. Like, get up in the morning after matches to watch them back, because when you're reporting on them live, you do miss quite a bit because you've your head buried in your laptop trying to get your report out at full time. Usually you kind of approach that with a little bit of dread, mainly because you try and watch it back in the RT player and it never fucking works, but it did this time. But you are also looking forward to watching back that performance because it was really good. So things would have to go really badly awry next month for them not to get the contract, I think, anyway. You know, like Roy Barrett, the FAI chairman, as fate would have it, was up for interview the day after the Luxembourg disaster in March, and he gave him his full backing and even said that if we see progress and if progress continues to be made, then there's a contract extension in the offing. there's definitely been progress made since then, you know. So I know there'll be a thing made now is like, oh, we have to finish third, you know, to justify us getting a contract. I don't think that's the case. They just have to continue to show that they're improving. And like that, there's no point putting points totals on that because football is, you know, comes down to a random game of chance a lot of the time, you know. So all they have to do is continue putting in these performances and continuing to improve. And I have to say, bar that, like the only real blip since the Luxembourg nadir was Azerbaijan at home. You know, that was another poor day. But like they've reacted well since then. Okay, they were played off the park at times against Serbia, but you know, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says, like you're allowed to have a good goalkeeper who makes saves, and like that's, you know, you can technically say that's part of the team building, and Bazunu wouldn't be in the team perhaps under a different manager. I think that's fair to say. So all they have to do is keep on showing signs of progress, and I think he's totally fine. I honestly think it would be for any FAI board member at that match last night listening to the reaction, it would be a courageous decision to get rid of him. And I mean that courageous in the yes minister sense of the word, in which they say a controversial decision will lose you friends, but a courageous decision will lose you elections.
Sure, yeah. And good stuff there, lads. And thanks very much to our members, as always, for sending in those questions. Dave, the narrative here now, I suppose, is that Ireland will be full of confidence going to Luxembourg next month. But maybe it's important to remember that that could be blown to smithereens a few days earlier by Cristiano Ronaldo or Bruno Fernandes or Bernardo Silva or whoever happens to be in the mood.
Well, that's it, exactly. Like, I think the fact that Ireland could go to that last game against Luxembourg and already know that they can't overtake them, obviously, if Portugal beat Ireland in Dublin. And are Luxembourg a home or away to Azerbaijan? I think, I'm not too sure if in the other game before that as well, so you would expect Luxembourg should have enough to beat Azerbaijan too. That's it. I don't think, in terms of tying that in with the say with the contract stuff and also with the last game, I just think now it's a case of, I think there's been enough signs of being able to recover from obviously a serious sticky patch and not fall to bits. Whereas if players weren't backing them and the manager and the staff weren't in the right things, that could have very easily happened after Luxembourg and also Azerbaijan. I think what would be the key is I'm just curious, because obviously they're going to have to review, say, in November. Will they just stick with it until the Nations League, given those first four games, because there's four games in that first window, and then make a decision after that? Or will he say, given the new contract before the Nations League even starts, to say he has the full campaign? Because otherwise, you'll be dragging into a scenario where every game again the Nations League is going to be almost win or bust from it. It's going to just maybe could be swinging from one factor to the next in terms of what his future is going to be. Because I do think after in the Nations League, if the FAI keep him on, which they're going to obviously, they'd have to make a decision not to because his contract runs until those games. I think what would be key for next year and build on that would be that sustained progress where there aren't those major kind of blips that would be unforeseen that we've already had so far. And typically as Ireland, or I don't mind saying as we have done in the past, actually picking up results against the big teams. Like in an ideal world, Ireland throw a spanner in the works and get a result against Portugal, because obviously they're going head to head essentially for Serbia, although they play in the last game. So it's like, it's not as if Portugal lose to Ireland or don't win against Ireland, that's the end of their campaign too. They know they have that last game against them to kind of finish top of the group. So they just got a bit of confidence in them. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see, because it's the first time really that they've had it going into a next window. The question now will be, can they build the momentum? Can they actually kick on and show that it's not just two game wonder, so to speak, you know?
You said last week, Gav, that Ireland shouldn't be expecting to beat anybody based on how the last few years have gone, which was fair enough. But surely they'll be bitterly disappointed with anything less than a win against Luxembourg.
Yeah, probably. Based off last night, they'd be bitterly disappointed if they don't beat Portugal, you know. And like the great shame, I think, of last night is the fact that the World Cup would be denied our presence. I mean, if they're like the Qatar World Cup couldn't afford many other things to undermine its credibility, but there's one. But yeah, no, I agree. I think that they should really be targeting that win against Luxembourg. And just briefly on what David was saying around the Nations League, I think, and I thought this was tactical from Kenny last night in the press conference, I think that they kind of have to give him the contract before that campaign, because he wasn't looking at, you know, he's always been, up to now, he's always been avoided must-win game, or do you want to finish third, or do you have to finish second, or are you aiming to top the group, or is this, you know, is this a must-win game? He's asked for his, where this team can go. Really vague question, could have done anything with it, and it was his decision to bring it down to specifics and say, we're really going to aim to top the Nations League group. We have four games in July, or in June, then two games after that, because if we top the group, we're guaranteed a playoff for the Euros. So that, I felt, was kind of slightly laying down the gauntlet to those who are going to make the decision.
Yeah. Excellent stuff as always, lads. We're going to leave it there for now. But the football family will be back next week to look ahead to the start of the Ireland Women's National Team's World Cup qualification campaign. Vera Pauw's side, on the back of that very encouraging win against Australia, will take on Sweden at Tala Stadium on Thursday next week. That's Thursday, October 21st. Tickets for that game, by the way, are on sale now from Ticketmaster. €10 for adults, €5 for under-16s. And we'll have a new episode out next week to preview the game. So keep an eye on your feed for that. But for now, thanks for listening and supporting the 42. We'll chat to you again soon.